Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Coco Express Show for Saturday, February 12th, 2011. And I'm your host, Aurelia Lyles, and we are live with Dr. Alisa English, also known as Dr. Alisa, the Provocative Doctor. And the show's title today is Valentine's Tips. If you have any questions and want to join in on the dialogue, please call 347-637-2319 and press 1. That's 347-637-2319. Let me give you a little background information about Dr. English. Dr. Alisa English is a mental health professional with a PhD in clinical social work. And she has built a practice that targets issues confronting many of the challenges that plague our society from suicide to depression. She especially wants to empower women and young girls. However, today she's going to help us try to maneuver through this whole Valentine's Day mystique. And, you know, it's so funny. There are so many stories surrounding the history of Valentine's Day. And being a romantic that I am, I chose this particular story. One legend contends that Valentine was a priest who served during the 3rd century in Rome when the emperor, Claudius II, decided that single men made better soldiers than those with wives and families. He outlawed marriage for young men. His particular group of potential soldiers was not allowed to get married. However, Valentine realized the injustice of this decree. He defied Claudius and continued to perform marriages for young lovers in secret. When Valentine's actions were discovered, Claudius ordered that he be put to death. Now, that's noble, and it cost him his life, but he didn't have to spend anything to do this. However, today, we are spending close to $15 billion a year on chocolates, flowers, cuisine, and much more. Just to say what? That's the big question. That's why Dr. Alisa is here. She's going to help us understand how we can have lasting love way beyond Valentine's Day. Dr. Alisa English?
Yes.
Hello. How are you?
How are you? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am so glad you can join us today.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. No pun intended.
Okay. Now, we are spending all this money on Valentine's Day, and the majority of people are so unhappy. Why?
Yeah, you know, we are certainly in a time right now. And again, thank you for having me and a really big shout-out to your audience for spending the time with both of us today, particularly when we're in this love mood. So this gives us the time to kind of share love and receive love from them as we have this conversation.
Yeah.
I can say that, you know, overall right now in society, with the economy, with the breakdown in families, with social strife around the world, people are quite depressed. You know, our children aren't necessarily achieving the kind of success that we all hope for them. With, you know, in some states or some cities, children's readiness for college at a 5% rate in the United States. I mean, you're talking about, you know, generations of people who are going through a very depressed state right now. 60% of people suffer from depression at any given point per year in our society, which puts us over 130 million people around the world suffer from depression. So, you know, and this is at any given time. So if you compound that with all the pressures related to some of these very superficial things like holidays, you know, when you have this somehow emotionally you feel driven to give and hopefully receive something from somebody, and oftentimes we believe that receiving something should be tangible, something we can put in our hand as opposed to in our soul. Mm. We feel emotionally bankrupt when people, for whatever reason, aren't necessarily giving us what we think we deserve and what often we expect from others, as opposed to expecting what we should have in ourselves.
Yes, I agree with you. Now, with that in mind, there should be some kind of foundation that we should set for happiness and contentment within ourselves. Now, what would some of those things be?
Well, I would say, we spend a lot of time with trying to figure out other people. Maybe we should find some time to master ourselves, understand ourselves, self-mastery, know exactly what it is we desire, what fulfills us, what kinds of things that make us feel at peace. Because we can spend all the time in the world trying to fix other people, and then we're broken beyond repair. So I think it's important for us to find a way to clearly sit and understand who we are.
Mm-hmm. Now, my whole thing lately, I've been noticing that there is a lack of human kindness just abound. And, I find it so difficult to try to explain to people that, a little human kindness goes a long way.
Oh, absolutely.
And, and what you're saying is so true. And finding, contentment and happiness within ourselves is just so important. However, when you take all of that and you put it into this particular holiday because it's here, you have so many people sitting there saying, how come I don't have a Valentine's, or why don't I have this? Or they're in relationships and they're wondering why it's such a lackluster relationship. Can you just shed some light on that?
Well, I completely believe in this whole idea that you need a strong emotional connection. And unfortunately, even when you're in a relationship, there's a physical human being either sharing your space or your time.
Yes.
Mentally or physically, but you still feel completely empty. There is a lack of emotional connection, and it can be for many reasons. Because once we have someone in our life, a physical presence, a being, a body, a person, there then automatically becomes an expectation.
Mm.
And so the expectation is that that person can read my mind. Or you start to question yourself. So we are influenced a lot in society by media and by what the ideal person is or looks like. And so we start to feel inferior around who we are, what we look like, and inept. And so we think that people aren't necessarily attracted to us because of some kind of physical characteristic that we think we don't have. We have expectations. Again, I'm going to go back to the expectations. And people, when we have someone in our life and they're not necessarily fulfilling whatever it is we want them to fulfill, partly is because there's poor communication. And after a while, people just stop talking to each other and they just exist. So you do that because you really don't want to feel loneliness. So the person is filling a void because they're a body. There's a human body in your presence, but there's nothing else going on there. So around this time, it's love in the air. We see it around us, but in your heart and in your home, there is no love. And for whatever it's worth, if you don't communicate with each other at some point, even if the communication results in the fact that that person may not be in your life anymore, it's better than spending a life of unhappy, where you just have no happiness.
Mm-hmm.
There's no happiness, no nothing, because you will never just automatically emotionally connect with someone once it's been broken down. So there's that emotional connection in the initial phase. You really don't have that much expectations from this human being. But as you've been around them for a while, you do have more expectations. And once that emotional connection breaks down, it's very hard to find it, revive it. You just can't seem to wrap your hands around it. And oftentimes people are in relationships for not only a couple of months or a couple of years, but often decades. They haven't kissed, and I know if you've read any of my material, there's people who have been in, sex with marriages and not to put a whole lot of energy into sex, but there's something about the connection between two people, if they're healthy, that's, magical. And so if that's not connecting, if they're not feeling that love, that joy, that spirit between two people, I can't understand why people would continue to mentally drag themselves down.
I agree with you 100%, and yes, I did read a lot of your material, and I have to sit here and say that I don't get it either. And what I seem to also find that adds another equation into the mix of misunderstanding is technology. And I think that technology is a wonderful thing, but it's also causing us a whole heap of trouble.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's interesting. There was a study done about social networking, and that because you see, say, on Facebook or Twitter, only the happy side of people's lives, what we're finding that is people are becoming more depressed because mm-hmm. they'll look at the lives of people, say, on Facebook, and it seems like these people are having so much fun and just pleasure beyond, you know, our wildest imagination, and people are sitting home feeling like they're bankrupt. They don't have that same pleasure. And so, you know, and most of that is illusion, just like a magazine, just like, you know, television, mm-hmm. you know, and brainwashing them. And people are actually sitting home, and in some cases they're finding that people are going into severe depression just going on Facebook and sort of viewing the pages of, quote-unquote, you know, virtual friends.
And I don't mean to laugh.
And seeing these virtual friends in this euphoric state, and they're like looking at sitting in their home within their four walls and saying, wow, why can't this be me at that really hot party? Or why can't this be me in that really, you know, awesome outfit? Or why can't that be me hung up with that man or that woman? Or both, whatever it is. So, you know, you're right. I think this whole technology piece and this whole virtual friendship and social media has really destroyed the human connection between people.
Yes, it has. It really has. And even though it is a convenience, and sometimes we lead such really busy lives, it makes it difficult for us to connect in a one-on-one way. In some instances, this is a good thing. It keeps us connected and being able to keep the level of the dialogue open. It also causes the problems that you just mentioned. Now, when you were talking about, you know, people being in relationships for long periods of time where there is no passion, now, would you say that that's because they just become lazy, or they're just not willing to put the work in to make the relationship work? Because you enter a relationship and it just doesn't exist. You have to work at it. What could you say the problem could be or might be?
Okay, well, you know, it's funny. There's, you know, Dr. Lisa will always refer back to studies, whether you accept them or not. I think a little data is better than none, and a little research is better than none. There's a study that says that relationships, in terms of the love, that really strong emotional connection, last anywhere between 3 and 5 years of that relationships, where you really have that strong love, that passion kind of love and desire. So that most people, as far as this dwindle, if you will, or, you know, decrease after 5 years. And that's even with some of the most loving relationships. So, yes, I do agree you need to put a lot of work in. However, what happens is work is like anything else. If you don't like it, you don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so work is like anything else. It becomes routine. So the outcome of your job oftentimes is that you will receive some kind of payment or compensation for whatever service you're providing to that organization or entity. And so you become sort of used to that, mm-hmm. and that's just the way, that's the bargain. I really dislike coming into this office every day, but because you compensate me with your, you know, $2,000 every 2 weeks or whatever it is, you know, I'm okay. And I'll, you know, come in cheerfully, and in some cases not so cheerfully, and just do what I have to do. Mm-hmm. But human behavior is a little bit different. We sort of go into the same mode as work. I don't really like this person, but we have an apartment together, and Lord knows the rents are way too high, and let's just keep this going because we have an apartment together, or we have a mortgage. No, really, these are the things people rationalize their whole life around. Very, very, you know, these things that when you think about it, it's just so material in nature. shelter. I mean, it's a necessity, home, food, clothing, and shelter. But sometimes it's reduced to that. It's almost like, well, I have a mortgage, and Lord knows I'm used and accustomed to this lifestyle, and I really don't want to change it. And although I don't love this person or really like this person, I think that I'll just continue to stay. As long as they don't say anything is wrong with it, I'll just continue and do this. And they'll go on like that for years and years and sort of learn not to love anymore. Really, people can become to the point where they really have no emotion whatsoever. They haven't received love in a very long time, so they really don't know what it's like or what it feels like. And it just becomes driven by need and necessity. And so what happens is most people have infidelity in relationships. That's what happens. Human beings are not like a job. They need to be touched. They need to be talked to. They need to be nurtured in a different way. And so if we neglect that fact because everybody's moving along in the motion and believe we have an agreement, that person is going to find that somewhere. And we're finding that women are in fact cheating or have infidelity relationships just as much as men today. Because they're like, if you know, we have a situation over here, but I still need to feel some, you know, as though I'm loved and I'm desired and that there's something that I can feel happy about when I'm with someone.
Everyone needs that connection, and I believe that too. I mean, just like with babies, you know, they said you take a baby, you take two babies, and I think there was a study done because I'm with you on the studies and research.
Uh-huh.
You take two babies, one baby gets a great deal of affection and emotion, and the other one gets none. The one that gets all the affection and emotion tends to grow and thrive. The one that doesn't grow as rapidly as the other. So.
Right.
It's part of who we are and how we are as human beings. So it's necessary. So I guess Dionne Warwick was right when she said what the world needs now is love, sweet love, huh?
Yeah, but you know, the interesting thing about love and emotion, you know, when you do love so passionately and so unconditionally, it is the most beautiful thing. And it's funny how you are so willing to go through struggle with that person. Let's take two people addicted to drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, right, can't understand that relationship. Now, we've seen them, right? You see them walking down the street, holding hands, moving about life, trying to negotiate within their world and their existence. But it's something about the unconditional love of that situation. You say to yourself, they're both enabling each other, right, because there's an addiction problem. There's an enabling situation going on there. But you can't take away the fact that there's also another component of that. That if one of them said, let's get clean today, and I've seen this happen in my practice, the other one will follow. Because the desire to please each other in that scenario is so strong that you can see, like, the love. You know, I've seen people who are extremely rich. And, you know, they come into a session and no one speaks to each other. And basically all the woman wants to know is how am I going to maintain, you know, this house and whether you're going to give it to me or not give it to me. Or, you know, it's all about, you know, these things that they have. It's nothing about each other. I just don't understand, you know. I look at people and I go, wow, it seems like so much love is here. And it has to be that way. Think about it. When you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, and this is particularly related to people of color or any disenfranchised group, where people, most of the world is poor.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have things. But wouldn't the world just sort of like disappear if it was about just things? There has to be something else that drives us to be connected to people in a way that's beyond just all the material things. And when you know, we have a very high divorce rate in the United States or in Western civilizations, but what is that about? I think that's more about the impact of all the other stuff around us that we lack that connection towards one another. And people have it all over the world, and they don't have all the things that we have in Western civilization.
Mm-hmm.
So something to be said about that emotional connection. And we have to work hard to kind of understand it, believe it, and try to work toward it all the time, because if we're guided by material things, then we will be emotionally bankrupt.
Yes. Now, you had put out your 10 tips for totally taking care of self and achieving lasting love. I really loved all 10 of them, and I have to tell you, thank you, because some of them I had kind of put to the wayside for my own self, and I'm like, she's right on point with this. Now, I want you to share your 10 tips.
Okay, so like really quickly, let's run through those, right? So we talked a little bit about self-mastery. We also have self-time, you know, spending that time with yourself so that you can get to know and discover who you are authentically. I mean, what do you really like in music? What do you really like in terms of decor and smells and taste and touch? You know, is it really driven by what society tells you you should appreciate, or is it really what you appreciate? You know? You don't have to appreciate something because your family value system said this is the way to go. Now, you know, I'm dealing with a family right now who has a lesbian child, right? And the family is traditionally heterosexual. But that's her life. Is she supposed to be heterosexual because that's what the family tradition is? That's not what she's into. That's not what makes her happy and feel fulfilled. So she should live, she should have a life that lacks authenticity because the family values, I don't agree. So spend time with yourself and get to know yourself and feel proud of who you are when you are there. Self-groundedness in your spirituality. You know, we all claim to believe in something. Unfortunately, the way we treat each other, as you pointed out earlier, certainly doesn't spell spirituality in my book. We are very short with each other. We tend to be quite unconsciously envious and jealous of those who we think may or may not have something that we desire. And so I think that we need to deposit a little more of that spirituality as it relates to our principles and values into our own emotional bank and really, you know, find a way to tune ourselves between what's spiritual and what's self, because, you know, you can't fool and trick God. So if that's what you think you're doing, you certainly lost that race, you know, before it began. So find your authenticity and your spirituality, and that'll help to balance you out a bit more. It's not about just going to the church and going to masjid or whatever it is and not really being true to who you are. I really think you should release a lot of the things that we often say, you know, are bad. You know, they're negative emotions. Things like, again, jealousy and pride and greed, ego pampering, you know, it always has to be about you. Envy, you know, and replace those things with positive energy like humility and love, trust, understanding, empathy, and always patience. You know, we must be patient. It's like raising a child. You can't take a 2-year-old and put them in the middle of Central Park if you're in New York City, because they can't survive. You have to have patience with the child in order to groom them and rear them so that they can function in a society. Always reflect on your own imperfections. Lord knows we have more than we care to admit, so we should certainly reflect a lot about that so that we can see people for who they are, because people come with their own flaws, and you have to make a decision whether their flaws and your flaws can somehow find, you know, love and passion and a willingness to, you know, move ahead in this life and society as a couple, as a union. So really reflect on yourself so that you can, you know, attract those that have similar desires. Self-objectification, that's a big one. You know, we tend to internalize often what other people feel about us. So if I say to you, you know, you just ought to have a man, you're 35 years old, you haven't had any children yet, you know, I mean, women will take that totally to heart, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe I should have children. I'm 35, I have 4 eggs left, you know, whatever it is. I mean, you know, and believe you and I, we see it in Hollywood every day, right? We're all of a sudden, woman turns 35, and next thing you know, she's pregnant. There's nobody around, or you heard about somebody really quickly. Whatever happened, but the fact was, somewhere along the line, they've been convinced they had to have children, and we do have a desire to want to recreate, right? So, but don't really internalize things. Understand where your life is, where you are in life right now, because bringing a child in the world, is a good thing? Is it a good thing for you right now? Are you able to care for that child? Will that child be more rich if born today in your circumstance? So people have to think about that, really. Do never allow anything to internalize and ruin where you're trying to go. because it can really damper you, really, really damper you. People tend to do it without even realizing it. Self-care, and this is a big one. We think about how we treat our mind, body, and soul, right? So we should be eating a balanced meal, right, exercising as much as we can, because the better you look, the better you feel, and the probably the more people you'll have that you're attracted to you, because people are attracted to people who are proud about who they are and seem to take care of themselves. It's something about, you know, seeing someone who's kind of down on their luck, right, or feeling emotionally under stress. We're not necessarily drawn to that person, right? But when a person is taking care of themselves, even when things are hard, you know, you're always able to, like, attract those things that can, you know, I guess make you feel more empowered.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you must always take care of yourself, not only for other people, but just because it's better to be in a healthy state than to be in a physically depleted state. Self-confidence. Extremely important, you know. Most of the time, we have very poor and low self-esteem for many, many reasons. Like you said, the media, you know, just at work, you know, as people of color, you tend to feel disenfranchised in many ways. Racism is still huge in society. And so there's a lot of reasons why we have very low self-esteem. Relationships, 70% of African-American women are single. So, you know, people feel somewhat like, what's wrong with me? Like you said, why can't I find someone? But it builds confidence, no matter what. Allow people to fake it until you make it. Struggle with it. Just continue to tell yourself, I'm good, I'm okay, I'm fine, I'm okay with who I am right now and how I plan to be tomorrow. And because confidence, when it enters the room, people just, it's like a magnet, people are drawn to it.
Mm-hmm.
Self-control, this is a big one, you know. We all think we've mastered self-control by 10 years old, right? Because,
mm-hmm.
hey, that's the thing. Everybody, every child gets a D in that when they're in the third grade. But, yeah, adults have the same problem around self-control. Refers to resisting temptation, thinking before you act, and a demonstration of patience, right? Because
mm-hmm.
the best really have self-control can result in all sorts of destructive behavior, like obesity and substance abuse and even destructive relationships. You know, we talk about the enabling of two substance abusers. They may be madly in love because they both have a similar interest. But
yes.
Is it a healthy relationship? Well, a healthy relationship is also a relationship where you both eat too much, you know, or
mm-hmm.
you both smoke too much, or you both don't know how to control your own spending habits, where you're in debt over your head. So, yeah, don't look down at the substance abuser and you're in, you know, $1 million worth of debt because you lack self-control. Going on to, and back on one thing about self-control, research suggests that, you know, self-control can be influenced negatively or positively depending on the people that are around us. So we must be careful and choose our friends and our associates and our lovers very wisely because they can raise our temperament to the point that we get to work and start, you know, telling off all our coworkers because
uh-huh.
we're so annoyed.
I've seen that before.
You know, you're like, what happened to Susie? Like, she
uh-huh.
just flipped out on all of us. Something's going. And, you know, the first thing everybody says, she must be something going on at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually is. Self-gratification. I love this one because I believe in the pleasure principles, you know. It's so hard to find your little minute of happiness in life. So I'm all about really finding a way to understand your mind, body, and soul because, you know, oftentimes men will say to you, well, I don't know, does that feel good? How can I please you? And, you know, women are shy about saying that, you know. It's amazing. Like, they want the man to just figure it out like a little puzzle or something. You know? you should know. But men aren't about knowing. Like, they're, you know, their mind is wired in a different way, you know. They're about, like, you know, getting their self-gratification.
Mm-hmm.
They have a straightforward outcome in their pleasure principle. It's like boom, boom, bam, and that's the outcome. You can go through that process with them, and there's nothing that you achieved in that experience. So you need to certainly find those things that gratify you, that are healthy, productive, and positive. and do that work on the front end, because when you meet someone, you don't want them to play a whole bunch of games with you. People, men are attracted, especially the kind of men that the women that are listening in our audience right now, they want men that are strong, that are, you know, confident, that are secure, that just have this thing about them that I call it. I said I'm going to write a book called That Thing. It's that thing, you can't put your hand on it, but he got it. You know?
Yeah, I know.
he may be missing two or three other things, but that one thing, he got that. And so, you know, we know exactly what we're talking about. And when we get that man that we know has that thing, we need to nurture that in a way that we know that we understand what thing turns us on and what kinds of things we like, so you both can enjoy each other together. I think, you know, a life where you spend time with self-improvement and developing yourself is always a life work, but it helps you to understand who you are and understand the core of your being, so that you can really establish the kind of relationships, not only personal ones where, you know, there's a male-female relationship, male-male, female-female, but that it's interpersonal ones where when you have working relationships with people, that you come to them with a smile, that when they see you come in the office, it's something about you actually please them just to see your face come into place. That in itself is a beautiful thing, and very few people have it. They have to work a lifetime to get it, and that's why when we see people like Obama, no matter what he's saying, he exudes confidence. We love that. And we know there's a few people in our life or that we've experienced that do that, and it's a good thing. So you should always work toward it.
Yes. Now, there was something else that I read in one of your articles when you talked about when women in general get involved in some situations, that women have a higher tendency of being depressed, much more so than men. And it's due to all of the other influences that we have around us. Now, how can, this is going to be tough for me to try to craft the right way, but how can...
This is a family show, right? I know crafting those words can be tough on a family show, but you're getting it. Go ahead.
Okay, how can women... I have a daughter who is, she's 21, and... It's difficult for me to try to explain to her that if you love you, then you won't want somebody in your life who's not going to make you feel like you're loving you. And she keeps telling me, well, how do I avoid schemers? How do I avoid this? And how do I avoid that? And I keep telling her, people give you based on what they understand. And she's like, well, what does that mean? I said, if you were brought up in an environment where they told you all the time that you were ugly or they made fun of you and so on and so forth, you're going to bring that with you wherever you go. And you're going to look for somebody who's going to tell you the same things, because in your mind, that means that somebody loves me. And you're going to get, you know, and then you have men out there who, I don't want to say it, they just really don't know how to treat people. And I'm trying to explain to her, you know, there are a lot of women out there, women, as women in general, we have a lot of issues that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis that we don't discuss. And when we get involved in a relationship, for some of us, it feels as if this is a place where I can go and be myself and I can cast away the things that I'm not discussing and just throw myself into this relationship and have fun and be happy, but only to find out that man may say one or two things that just brings up those issues. How, as women, can we, you know, you've given us the 10 tips for lasting love with ourselves, and if we get involved with someone else, but as women, how can we kind of work on not falling into the trap of being in situations that bring up old issues that cause us to fall back into that depressive mindset? Because we go there a lot. I mean, more often than not.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's an excellent question. And, you know, the beauty of life is the fact that you will make mistakes, if you will, for lack of a better word. You will make mistakes. You will regress. That's a better terminology. We regress often. We also find ourselves in situations that are counterfeit, and so people present a different self to us, and then we experience something with them that then takes us back, you know, 5 years, or puts us in a state where we can't seem to move forward. It takes work, and I think we as a community have to also accept therapy. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I and this sounds very, you know, cliche, but you will be surprised the power of the conversation with someone who is not necessarily connected to you in any other for any other purpose other than for you to have that conversation to help you to self-reflect. So you feel you're in that depressed state because of a situation that has gone, you know, astray. You need to have a conversation so that you can have that reflective dialogue. Say, look at yourself, almost mirroring yourself, and say, look, this was a part of my experience in life. This person taught me a valuable lesson, because even if it was that person was counterfeit, you learned some of the tools to detect the next counterfeit dollar. So even in the worst-case scenario, if you still come out of it on the other side, meaning your health is intact, your physical health is intact, your mental health has been, you know, tampered with somewhat, but you can try to pull it back together, I think you're still in the winning state, because now you put more tools in your experience bank, more tools in your experience bank to see those things coming that will be destructive. Now, the unfortunate part of being a human being, unlike other species in the world, is that we are emotional creatures. And there's some things that even science can't explain. So you as a woman, her mother, or me as a mother to my son, there's certain things that we, you know, I had my son at 18 years old. You couldn't tell me that I wasn't in love with that man. To this day, I still see my son, father, and I as being completely in love. Now, to other people, that sounds odd. But that was nothing that man could do that made me, you know, I just thought he was the end all and be all. Now, you know, thinking about that, what was it? It was just a simple, strong love connection. He was murdered a year within, you know, after my son was born.
Mm-hmm.
So, boom, right? That threw me into adulthood real quick, fast, in a hurry. But the fact is, I had to go through that experience, you know, to understand what it was like to feel it. And it wasn't that he was counterfeit. He wasn't counterfeit. It was just that I had to experience that. Now, would I tell another young lady to have a baby at 18? Heck no. But I know when I wanted to have my child at 18, there was nothing my mother could do to stop me. So there was, I mean, she tried everything. And, I mean, they were a strict Muslim family. So they tried everything, including lock me in a basement, you know. But I mean, they tried everything, literally. I mean, you know, it wasn't nothing they didn't try. But it didn't help, because I already had my mind set up. So my whole point is, we want to protect the younger, you know, our youngsters around us. We want to protect our children. But some of it is experience. But you've given her enough tools for her to at least question a counterfeit $2 bill. She's going to at least question it. But if the emotion drives her enough, it's something that you know about that thing. So you got to teach her a little bit about that thing, you know, because we don't tell our young girls about that thing, that magnetic thing that makes us connect to people that can be unhealthy for us. But you've given her enough tools to at least say, oh, God, I'm not sure. But even if she makes one mistake, meaning she, let's just say for argument's sake, she sleeps with him one time. Let's just say that.
Mm-hmm.
You gave her the tools to know that at least to use protection, right?
Yeah.
Right. So you may not be able to control the experience of sex that she's given up the goods. She has to now feel that emptiness when this man doesn't call her for 6 weeks, and now she has to repair the self-esteem damage. Then you could go back and say, see, you know what I mean? These are the things I was trying to protect you from. Now, did you use the protection? Yes. Okay. Whew. Now we don't have to worry about baby AIDS or, you know, some of the more severe things. So
yes.
You only give a certain amount of tools to build a house, but some of the structure has to come from the architect, him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to go through some of that. But you can just continue to feed her all the things she needs in order to get out here and do what she has to do. But you cannot control what I call that spiritual piece in our soul that connects us to human beings. You can't do anything about that. No one could do it for you when you had her. honestly. So, like, when you think about it, when you had her, there was something going on. Your mind was someplace, and there was something going on, and you created life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where you and that man are today, that's a different story, but you couldn't tell you that 21 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But not be able to tell us that. And I know when you reflect on that experience, you're like, oof, please don't let her go through what I went through. But you know what? She's going to have to.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? And she has to. You have to give her enough so that when she is depleted a bit, she can find a way to pull into that tool chest and refuel herself so she can keep going. Because you can't control bad people in the world or counterfeit people in the world. She's going to have to be able to spot them.
Okay, now, what about on the other side of the spectrum, the midlife people? It is a mess out here. How do these people try to manage and maneuver this whole thing that's going on out here with all of these middle-aged people dating? I find it just completely a zoo.
So you mean middle-aged people dating or middle-aged people doing what exactly?
Well, middle-aged people acting like teenagers, if you ask me. They're doing more than dating. They're just out there like they're teenagers just running through people as if it's not a big deal. And, you know, I hear my girlfriends talk about different things that they've encountered. I listen to some of the people that I pass by, and I'm hearing their conversation, and everyone's conversation seems to be the same. They ain't nothing out here. You got to take what you can get, blah, 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 blah. You'll see when you get there. What kind of advice can you give to these people who have reached this point and they're settling? And I don't understand what that means, but they're settling.
Okay. Well, settling to you, again, they can't live through you in your lens. So settling to you is an emotional fulfillment to them. So you don't see the power in what they're in their experience and what they're doing. But if you've been without a date or a relationship or that hug or that kiss for a half a decade, and someone shows some interest in you, and you're already at the point where you feel low self-esteem, you feel as though, you know, we are in a, what you call, a youth-driven society, so you feel like you're getting a little older, you're not as attractive, you're not, you know, the pickings are slim, you may make some desperate moves. Right? You make some desperate moves because of what? Because there's that natural instinct and desire for pleasure. It's, you have to use self-control, but it is very natural. Someone shows interest, that person has that thing, they hand it over to you, and next thing you know, you have middle-aged people running around, you know, having sex here and doing this over there, just to have, you know, a second of pleasure. You know, again, certain experiences are just experiences. But to take the mentee, see, my problem with the conversation that you guys are having is that, you know, is it about just they having experiences, or they just feel so low on themselves? Like when you said, oh, well, they feel like this is all that's available, you know, the pickings are slim. And, you know, to me, that's a self-esteem issue, and that requires a little more work, you
mm-hmm.
see? Because when you start settling in that regard, you're saying that this is all I'm worth. So, I really don't value myself that much, and so, therefore, I'll just do what I have to do. That's a different level of, to me, a different level of a concern, and that's one that requires, I think, a different intervention.
Mm-hmm.
However, if someone is, you know, in that stage where, you know, they're just having fun, meeting people, you know, having some conversations, maybe there's an experience between two people and they're clear about the boundaries. That's a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
That's somebody, you know, they're taking care of themselves. They're using protection. They're not out there with every, you know, John, you know, Tom and Sam, but they're just living their life in their own experience and in their own way and on their own terms. I'm okay with that, but I'm not okay with someone doing something because, hey, this is all that's out here and putting themselves in a place where they lack worth and value. That is a concern to me, and you're right. Many women are feeling that today, particularly as they get to the middle age and they've never been married or they're divorced or, you know, it becomes where, you know, men can take advantage of them. And you know, that's certainly a concern.
Okay, well, then that's good to know because, I mean, the settling part I've always had a problem with, even when I was really young and I used to hear people say, well, you need to just take what you can get, and I just never understood that. And I'm glad that you're able to clarify and explain all of these different things, which is really great. I'm just, like, I have a ton of things that I would love to ask you, but we only have a limited amount of time. However, if people wanted to get in contact with you, Dr. Alisa, how would they be able to do that?
Oh, many ways. So now I'm just going to renege on everything I said about social media and say Facebook. see, when it serves a purpose, you know, that's what I'm saying. If the experience serves a purpose, at facebook.com/Dr. Alisa English is always a nice way. Always go to the website of which we're putting, going through a restructuring of the website right now, but of course you can always get me at ask.dralisa.com, and there's email addresses up there, ask.dralisa.com. And, you know, I'm on Twitter, you know, twitter.com, Alisa English. Oh, God, I'm a hypocrite. Alisa English, Twitter. And so there's so many ways. Again, if you use all of those tools in a healthy way, they're okay. But when it's unhealthy, it's no good. But, yes, they can reach me that way. And they always can call me at toll-free. Mm-hmm. Look at that toll-free, 866-650-2676. That's 866-650-2676.
Yes. I have to say, you know, I have read a lot of your stuff, and I really like the fact that you're trying to empower young women, and that's so important. And I know if you have the time to come back another time and we can discuss this whole objectification of women and the media and stuff, I would love to be able to have that discussion with you as well.
Okay. Anytime. Yeah. I love having these conversations. It's important. When we were coming up, there was nobody talking about this stuff. So we just went with it, right?
Yeah, today. We just accepted what was given to us and went on. But now, I mean, there are so many things that are going on, and we really need to kind of find a way to put the reins on a lot of this stuff because our young girls are not getting the message right.
No, prostitution is actually up between the ages of 14 and 18 again. Very scary.
Yeah, and, you know, I read an article in a paper about 3 years ago about the prostitution ring out in Brooklyn.
I was just thinking about that. Yes, in Bushwick. Absolutely.
Yes, and how they started with the 11-year-olds. And I thought I was so angered by that, and I just can't understand how something like that could happen and continue to happen in this day and age, right in your own backyard in your neighborhood. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I need to know who's minding the store because it seems that we have stepped away and we're not looking.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It just breaks your heart. Oh, and all the building that's going on in Brooklyn in terms of, you know, just the structure, you know, so much money being poured in, but our children are being pretty much, you know, ignored. No building going on in terms of human and social capital. It's all about, you know, the financial capital, $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000 to rent, children competing with each other for material items. It has become a real bankrupt society, really.
Yes, and, I mean, you can go to any inner city in any state, and you're going to find some things that are really going to just really upset you to the point where you begin to ask yourself, who am I and what am I doing? Because I have to be doing something wrong to see something like this happen. So, you know, we have to kind of figure out a way. However, we can save that for another show because that is a really important issue, I think, that needs to be addressed. And I would love to have that dialogue with you in depth at that time.
Perfect.
Okay, great. So I am going to say that I really, truly wanted to thank you because we are all a work in progress, and any information, I believe that any information that will help us be better is always a benefit, and you have provided us with some really solid tools that we could use just to get us in the right frame of mind to be able to love ourselves. And if we love ourselves, we most definitely be able to have love, share love, and give love to someone else. And, you know, these tips are excellent. I'm going to put the tips on my webpage. You can also probably find the same tips on your website when you get it up and running.
Yes.
Okay. When you have your website, you know, restructured and everything, the tips will be there and available. And they're not tips just for Valentine's Day. They're tips for every day, because you don't live just for one day. You live for every day. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time. Yes. And like I said, I would love to have another conversation with you in regards to the young adults, the youth in the community, so we can arrange that at another time. But I would like to thank you. I'd like to thank Double Exposure for once again providing me with this wonderful opportunity. And of course, I want to thank my listeners for their time and their support. Please join me next Saturday when I'll have Steve Duncanson on, and we'll once again be doing Paradigm Shifters, where we'll continue our topic of goal setting. Have a blessed and wonderful day, and please enjoy your Valentine's Day. Goodbye.
Bye.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.